driving you home every weekday afternoon. This is 105 Drive with Julian Clover.
It's 5:32. Mitch Benn is the 37th Beatle. The acclaimed one-man show about the Fab Four is back on the road and coming to Cambridge on Friday night. I'm pleased to say that Mitch Benn is on the line with us now. Hello, Mitch.
Hello.
Good to speak to you. I'm venturing here that you're probably a little bit too young to remember the Beatles in their pomp, but I guess...
I am almost exactly the right age not to remember the Beatles. I was born about 6 weeks before they split up, and there's actually quite a lot of the shows about that. I'm of the generation that I think was permanently scarred by just missing the 60s in general and the Beatles in particular. Kind of informed, you know, our kind of cultural outlook. The fact that if you grew up in the 70s and 80s, literally all you ever heard about was how amazing the 60s were, you know. And it's, I think it kind of scarred, and it led to sort of things like Britpop being a bit of an inevitability, you know.
Yeah.
What I mean? Sort of. That we ended up trying to recreate the 60s for ourselves and getting it all a bit wrong.
It's interesting. I get that 60s feeling very much. I think I'm probably vaguely the same age as you. And
yeah.
I think one of my earliest television memories is the Beatles splitting up. I can't remember anything about them whatsoever other than a performance on the top of Broadcasting House. That's all I can remember about the Beatles.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, the thing is, I mean, I grew up just immersed in Beatles culture because I'm from Liverpool. I was born almost exactly the moment the Beatles split up. My parents knew them in the 50s. I mean, I know everybody from Liverpool of that age thinks they knew them, but my parents actually did.
Right.
And I sort of just grew up immersed in the whole thing, you know. And then the idea for the show actually came, I mean, I've been doing this show for just over a year. It's actually last year's Edinburgh show. I did this show for the Fringe last year, and I've been touring it all year. I'll be touring it right up till Christmas is the plan.
Mm.
But basically... I got the idea when a guy called Tony Sheridan died, which might sound a bit cold-blooded, but it really helped me out. And if the name's ringing a bell, there's another British rock and roll musician who was living and working in Hamburg at the beginning of the 60s, same time as the Beatles were there.
Right.
And he actually put a record out while they were all out there. It still comes on the radio every now and again. It's a rock and roll cover of My Body Lies Over the Ocean. And the reason it still comes on the radio occasionally is the Beatles were his backing musicians on that track. They were just roped in to be the session guys. And it was the first proper record that they were ever on. So when Tony Sheridan died about 18 months ago now, a lot of the obits began with, you know, sometimes referred to as the Fifth Beatle. Tony Sheridan thought, wait a minute. How many people have I heard sometimes referred to as the Fifth Beatle? I've heard a lot of Fifth Beatle. I mean, they can't all be fifth, you know. I mean, arithmetic alone dictates this.
I guess many people would argue... a few people might argue Ringo to be the fifth Beatle already.
Well, no, you see, that's something I will take issue with in the show. Yeah. The thing is, what I do is I write my list, you know, I have my whiteboard, you know, his real name is the Beatles, but everybody calls it the whiteboard, you know. I have my big whiteboard up on stage, and I write out my list of people in descending order of Beatles from 1 to 37. And yes, some people think that you should have Peter number 4 and Ringo at number 5, but I mean, the thing is, I do actually make... What I hope is quite a compelling case for Ringo. I think Ringo is much maligned in certain circles. Way better drummer than most people give him credit for. And his importance to the Beatles can't be underestimated. You know, I mean, that's the point. I mean, they're a perfectly good rock and roll band with Pete, but it's really when Ringo joins it, they become so much more. You know, he's like the last piece of the puzzle.
I guess he kind of gave sort of an added showbiz element, if you like, sparkle.
Is, you know, to a certain extent, as I was explaining, you know, one of the things about the Beatles is they influenced forms that weren't around at the time and wouldn't be recognised for decades to come. When Ringo joins, basically, is the moment they invent the boy band, because you've got all your kind of your boy band archetypes in that person. You've got your sort of, you know, your sarcastic, loudmouthed bad boy, and you've got your dreamy-eyed romantic, and you've got the slightly cool and mysterious one. And once Ringo's in, you've got the just plain adorable little one who all the mums want to take home and cook dinner, you know. So that's Ringo invents Mark Owen, I suppose, is what I'm trying to say. Oh, nobody else stand against him as well as everything else. Yeah.
I guess the other thing which came out of Merseyside in the 1960s was kind of a bit of comedy. I'm thinking of people like Jimmy Tarbuck or perhaps maybe Ken Dodd as well, running alongside the music.
Maybe not so much Ken Dodd, because Ken Dodd's a slightly earlier generation. I think Tarbuck definitely kind of owed a little bit of his start to the fact that he turned up, you know, with that sort of sarcastic, scar sense of humour, looking a bit like a Beatle at the same time as the Beatles turned up. You know, it was because I mean, I think it was one of the things that was, I think, was immediately fascinating about the Beatles is they had that sort of that scousing ability to take anything particularly seriously, which is a, very much a scouse thing. It's the most sarcastic place on the face of the planet. It's just you know, there is a definite kind of, and it is it's at least as much sarcasm as actual humour. It's The Scouts are resolutely unimpressed by anything, you know. And that was, again, because you think, you know, even Elvis is our man on throne when he's been interviewed. He's a very polite southern boy, you know. Whereas the Beatles could sort of, you know, scarcely contain their sort of, like, you know, not contempt exactly, but just sort of, you know, they couldn't help but send everything up that they ever came into contact with, you know. So it was...
Yeah, the other thing,
you know, I think that was one of the things that the people found so compelling about them is that, you know, by and large, people in show business were deferential. You know, people in show business were polite and answered the questions, and they didn't just take the mick out of the interviews as the Beatles did. Particularly the Americans. The Americans are completely blown away by that when they went over in '64. They'd never seen people, you know, be, you know, just borderline rude at press conferences before, you know, but in a very good-natured way, you know.
Yeah. You do music, I think, as well, in the act. I guess, well, I know you do. Familiar from the Radio 4 stuff.
For anything, it's my Radio 4 stuff, you know. I'm, you know, been the resident song guy in the Now Show now for longer than I care to contemplate. You know? And if people know me, they tend to know me for that.
Did you? But the other thing, when I was, you know, doing the traditional swatting up as one does with guests, I wasn't aware that you also published author as well with a second book just out.
Yeah, it came out in July. The sequel to the first one. First one came out just over a year ago, last July, and the sequel came out just 2 months ago now. It's, first one's called Terror. Second one's called Terror's World. I describe them as kid-friendly science fiction. They're not necessarily specifically or in any way exclusively for kids, but they're kind of. For anybody over there, well, certainly the first one's for anybody over the age of about 11. The second one's a little bit more sophisticated. You might want to be about, you know, 12, 13.
A kind of Doctor Who level, you know, the sort of like the family-friendly science fiction.
I'm a massive Doctor Who fan. I find, you know, if people want to make that comparison, that's very mentally flattering, you know. But it's that kind of, yeah.
Oh, but I have to ask you, though, what do you think of Peter Capaldi on the strength of the two episodes?
I've only seen the first one. I haven't seen this week yet.
Okay.
I've not seen the second one yet. I was travelling. I was up in the Isle of Skye last week, and as you may or may not know, it basically takes a day and a half to get back from the Isle of Skye. So I was still somewhere up in sort of... still somewhere up in, you know, around the Clyde by the time it came on.
Yeah, I guess the iPlayer will help. Like, what's your judgment, though, on what you've seen so far?
I've only seen the first one.
Yeah.
I like the first one.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a massive fan of Capaldi anyway, and, you know, and just, you know, I wholeheartedly approve of Capaldi as the Doctor for one reason alone. He's 12 years older than me.
Yes, no, absolutely. I like a situation. All I need now is the political leaders of our country to start being older than me again, and then I'll be happy.
Yeah.
Well, Mitch, look, thank you very much for speaking to Cambridge 105 tonight, and you're at the Cambridge Junction Friday evening. What time does it all start?
I would imagine it's 8 o'clock, but I haven't checked.
That's
it's right. Usually 8 o'clock.
No, normally
it
is.
It'll either be 8:30 or possibly 7:30, but it's usually 8.
Okay, that's grand. Well, look, best of luck with that. And, yeah, thanks again for speaking to us. Thanks very much.
Thank you. See you soon.